Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Back Porch Writer Podcast, the show for writers, about writers, and writing. It's live, fun, and informative. Each week, I chat with writers, editors, and industry pros to give you and me a heads up about this whole new awesome publishing world. Back Porch Writer is about creating the life that you want through writing and publishing. Are you ready to tap submit? Let's explore the possibilities together. Welcome to Back Porch Writer.
Welcome to Back Porch Writer, the show for writers, about writers, and writing. I'm your host, Corey Miller, and today is April 26, 2016. And let me just tell you, it's a little breezy outside. I think we're expecting some storms or something later, so that should be very interesting. But since it's not happening now, it's not going to interrupt the flow of the show. So that's, you know, the upside. There you go. Always an upside. Today, we're talking with Larry Lucart about writing historical fiction, and his debut novel is Throw Salt on the Water. So without further ado, let me bring Larry to the program. Welcome to Back Porch Writer, Larry.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Corey. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad you were able to come back. I know that we had to get you rescheduled because of some unfortunate things on my end last time you were on. So I want to dive a little deeper into some of the things that we were trying to talk about then. But before we do that, let's start with a little bit about who you are and the book that you've written.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm a retired Missouri State Trooper. I've always been interested in historical fiction, particularly Civil War history. And so I decided to write this book based on that idea. And so that's how it developed. I have some experience with history, having been a history and political science major in school, in college. And then I've been a history, Civil War history, and an American history buff ever since. So that's how we got started with the idea of writing a book about historical fiction.
Mm-hmm. And your book, Throw Salt on the Water, what exactly is it about?
The book is about two boys, Andrew, who lives in Ohio, and Tug, who lives in Virginia, which at that time bordered the Ohio River before the creation of, in 1863, of West Virginia. So the entire state of Virginia came all the way from the Atlantic Ocean all the way over to the Ohio River. And these two boys are friends. They grew up together, enjoyed fishing and all of the things that young boys do, and particularly centered around the river. In early 1861, of course, as the war clouds loom, these boys have to make decisions about what they're going to do as far as the war is concerned. They're teenagers, 17, 18 years old, trying to understand what this might mean, not only for them personally, but also for their friendship.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said you're particularly interested in this period of time, but why? I mean, you could choose anything. You know a lot about history. So what attracted you to the Civil War period?
I find the Civil War to be one of the most pivotal events in our American history, maybe second only to the creation of the nation itself through the formation of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. This war was predicted, interestingly enough, by a number of the founders when they were trying to create our country, because they left out the problem of the slavery issue in the Constitution. And it remained from the time that the Constitution was written until the war broke out in 1861 as sort of a undertow in our society. The northern states were primarily abolitionist, and the southern states, of course, were slavery. And the southern states believed that the North was trying to to destroy their economy, which then created their desire to not have that happen. Furthermore, the South also believed that the North was trying to impose upon them their ideas of what a democratic country should really be about. And so they rebelled against that idea, along with the idea of losing their economy through the removal of slavery. So I've always found the Civil War to be a very interesting and very complex topic. And it's something that I believe carries on all the way into probably the final event was in 1965 with the passage of the Civil Rights Act, which began then to finally say that any kind of discrimination was illegal in America. So it carried on for another 100 years after the end of the war.
Mm-hmm. Took a long time, actually.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
Took a very long time. I had an interesting experience yesterday. I was substitute teaching, and actually it extended from a conversation on Friday. But one of the young people in my class asked, we were talking about, it was a religion class, and we were talking about the Beatitudes. And one of the Beatitudes has to do with being a peacemaker. And so I mentioned that I'm a pacifist. And they weren't sure what that meant, so I had them look it up. And then one of the students said, well, wait a minute, you know, because having wars, that can help economically, and that can be a good thing. And so he was going down that path. So what, as a history person, someone who has studied history extensively, much more than I have, what's your take on all that when it comes to wars and an economy? Do you see that, is that it? That's the purpose, I mean, of the wars? Because that's where he was coming from. That's what he thought.
He thought that wars, if I understand your question correctly, he thought that wars were economic, that we have wars to boost our economy. Is that what he thought?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. That's pretty much
no,
what
I don't
thinking.
Agree with that at all. I think particularly Americans do not fight wars to boost our economy. We fight wars for principle, for freedom, for liberty. We don't do a war to improve our economy. Now, having said that, we all understand that defense contractors and et cetera and so on in our country benefit from the idea of having a large army and a war that goes on because they can replace those things, et cetera and so on. But in principle and in behavior, I do not believe that Americans fight wars for economy. We fight wars for freedom of others, to free others. American general was in France at the end of World War II, and a French general said to him, "We believe that you are imperialist. You're trying to take over our country." And he said, "No, the only thing the Americans have ever asked for is enough ground on which to bury our dead." And I believe that holds true today, even with the problems that we're having in the Middle East, et cetera, and so on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate that, because I'm probably going to have him listen to this show so they could hear it from a history person instead of me. We couldn't get into it in a whole lot of detail because, of course, we were in a different class, not a history class.
Sure.
And so I could not address it a whole lot. I thought, hey, I'm talking to somebody who knows a thing or two about history. I'll ask him what he thinks.
Okay, well, you're welcome.
So there,
I hope
there
it helped.
Well, now I can point them in the direction of where they can listen to the show, because the thing about the kids is, especially the sixth graders, they did a little bit of research about me before I came to substitute teach because they knew I'm an author. And
I
so
see.
They were curious about the podcasting too, and my podcasting is clean, so they can listen to it, so I can point them in the direction of this episode and say, hey, go check that out, this is what this history person said.
Okay.
And that'll be helpful, I think, for him. I think that'll be good. So, okay, you're writing historical fiction, and obviously you have a history background, so maybe, I'm thinking maybe it wasn't as difficult for you as it might be for others, but I could be wrong. So what is involved in writing historical fiction?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because one of the most important parts of writing this book for me was to be accurate in my descriptions of what was going on at that time. So I did a tremendous amount of research as I was writing to make sure that troop movements, battle plans, the quotations from generals or others, if I had them in there, were accurate, trying to make sure that the timeline stayed correct. These two boys end up going to different parts of the country, so I followed them. Basically, I put them each in two units that I knew would end up at Gettysburg, which is sort of the culmination of the novel, the battle at Gettysburg. But the other, up until from 1861 to 1863, much of the war involved moving around and being in places, and there wasn't, we think of it as being a constant battle, but it wasn't. There was just a few days where they might have a battle, and then there was months sometimes on end where they didn't have a battle or didn't do anything. They were maybe off doing something else, like building a fort or some mundane thing like that. And so camp life was important also in the discussion of what went on with these two boys. So to be pointed here, I'm tried to make the historical part of the book accurate and follow this to the 14th Virginia, which is where Tug goes, and the 25th Ohio, which is where Andrew goes. I tried to make those two things very, very, those two unit movements and their actions very, very accurate. Now, the part that was fun was being able to say, well, it's fiction, so I could create my characters and then work around and work with historical movements to have a nice story, so that along the way you have some romance and you have some other things that happen. You have conflict and troop training and all that kind of thing, and my characters then could be a little more robust and not be dry, because history has a tendency for most people to be kind of a dry topic. So I tried not to do that. I tried to make my book interesting in the idea that we have interesting characters. At least I hope so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did notice, I looked over on Amazon to see how you were doing review-wise, and you could use more reviews, certainly. All of us can, but your reviews that you've received are really good, and you're at 5 stars on your book at the moment.
Yes, so thank you. Like, I appreciate you doing that. Yes, I've been very pleased also. I wish I had more reviews. I agree with you there, but it's very nice to see that people appreciate the book who have read it. So that's nice. That's very nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I noticed, and because I was over there, this is you have it as a paperback. Are there plans to make it as an e-book?
I'm honestly frustrated with that issue at this point, Corey. My publisher is not very excited about doing e-books, and I'm having a difficult time getting him to understand that that's one of the things that we need to do. I mm-hmm. wish we could. I don't think it's ever going to happen. So in this particular case, I'm afraid that you're going to have to buy the paperback if you want to read the book.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I wanted to just touch on that a little bit because I noticed it. North Slope Publications, is that your publisher?
Yes, North Slope Publications. That's correct.
Is this a small press? I haven't...
Yeah, very small press out of the Colorado Springs, Colorado area. I was very, very pleased that they picked me up as an author, and they did a wonderful job on producing the book mm-hmm. and creating the book. But there, because they're a very small press, I think there's only five authors so far in the press. They're fighting that new business plan problem, I'm sure. And I also understand from the editor that they tried an ebook with another author and it didn't pan out very well, and so now they're a little gun shy on doing ebooks. So I, at this point, I don't see it happening.
Interesting. I don't want to get too far into the rights and things like that, but some authors I know do, they have the rights, the print rights, that they're with a publisher, they have the print rights, but not necessarily the ebook rights, which would free up the author to do what they want to do. So maybe that's not the case here, but...
Yeah, I understand. No, I got myself into a contract that I believe I can't get out of as far as being able to do that. So that's just the way it is, you know.
Well, for the next one, things will be different,
okay.
I'm sure.
Yes, moving on.
And you're planning on doing the next one, right?
Yes, I'm working on another novel now. I'm not sure. I was asked if I thought a sequel was in the offering, and I'm not sure. I thought it was up to the public to decide if they wanted to see a second book, and so far from the reviews, I mean, I know they're small on Amazon. I've gotten good reviews, so I'm considering a follow-up novel to this particular, to Throw Salt on the Water. I think it... could carry on up through the end of the war and into Reconstruction, which is another area in the country that most people don't have very much knowledge about. As a matter of fact, even though I'm a history major, I don't have that much knowledge about Reconstruction. It's a period that we don't talk about much in America, American history.
It's true. That's true. Back to the whole researching thing, what are you doing to research this particular topic, whether it's Civil War or when you go to start studying the Reconstruction period so that you could include that into another book?
Well, fortunately, I have...
What sort of resources or access do you access?
Fortunately, I have a good library, so I started there with my text that I have here. And then, of course, I believe that Shelby Foote's Civil War is a foundation for anyone who wishes to study the Civil War. And so I used it as a primary reference, if you will. And then I did a lot of research on the Internet, which is a wonderful resource today compared to what we used to have to do, you know, go to the library and fumble through the file system until you could find something or whatever. I also purchased quite a few Civil War books while I was writing from very good authors, particularly Michael Sahara. His Killer Angels is a tremendous resource for doing research on the Civil War. Gives you a more human viewpoint of what happened. I also have the Civil War. It's a set of volumes that lists the various letters and those kinds of things that soldiers wrote. So you get to, you begin to see how they thought and what they thought and how they felt. And those things are important also. It sometimes becomes difficult in writing history that the emotions disappear out of the writing and you end up with just cold, hard facts. And that's no good because our history is people. We are, as people, we are. We make our own history every day. And so a lot of those guys and gals wrote a lot of material that's very, very good when you're trying to understand what went on emotionally with them during this period.
Mary
Chestnut, of course, her Civil War writings are very, very important. As a Southern female, you get a real feel for what she felt as a woman in this conflict, which is something that, you know, sometimes is missed too. Ravone, who becomes Tug's wife eventually in the book, I did a lot of research on her using Mary Chestnut, getting that feel for how Southern women really felt about what was going on in the war, those kinds of things. So I have about 500-600 pages of material that I copied and wrote out, and also studied battle maps extensively.
Oh, wow.
And to understand the troop movements. So when I was talking about, well, this unit moved here or that, or this unit moved there, but I got it correct in the book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
did you have an opportunity, or have you in the opportunity to visit any of the locations?
Yes, I've been to Gettysburg, and anyone who wants to understand the massive conflict, because it's hard to mentally picture 158,000 men fighting each other until you can see the field, and then you begin to get an idea of how extensive it was and how big the battlefield really was at Gettysburg, for example. I've also been to Antietam, which I cover briefly in my book, but I do try to visit some of the sites. I also covered in this book some of the smaller battles, those that are not really thought of in this war. Ball's Bluff, for example, and a couple other ones that, you know, if you got killed there, you were a casualty of the Civil War, even though your death kind of got glossed over by the other big battles, or if you were wounded there. But the conflicts for the individual soldier are there in that moment. It isn't even on a battlefield as big as Gettysburg. The individual soldier only sees what's in front of him. He doesn't have the big picture. He doesn't know what the rest of the people are doing, even in his own division or his own corps. But what's in front of him is his war. And that's how I tried to frame this, tried to bring it down to the individual soldier looking at his war and what it amounted to. I don't know if it was effective or not, but I sure tried.
How long did it take you to do the research portion?
It took me almost 3.5 years to write the book, if that gives you some idea.
Yeah.
My writing schedule was normally I wrote in the morning and I researched in the afternoon. I write better in the morning when you're fresh and you have an opportunity to wake up and you can get, you know, you get going. And then, of course, as we go along in the day, we get a little more mentally tired. And then so I did that. That was my routine. I didn't write every day, but I wrote almost every day for the last 2 years. By the time you revise and rewrite and do all of those things, it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time.
Especially if you're writing historical fiction.
Yes.
There must have been some things. Just in the next minute or so, what would you say was the most fascinating thing that you learned in doing your research?
I would say the most fascinating thing was the fact that even though the soldiers, the Union Confederate soldiers were fighting one another, they didn't hate one another. That was interesting for me. The little euphemisms that they used, you know, blue bellies for the Union, and oh, the Confederate soldiers were called by the Union butternut soldiers and that sort of thing. Those were more or less jokes. They weren't being cynical or nasty. They thought, and each side thought, the other had a point or two. Some of the Union people believed that the Confederate guys had a good viewpoint, and some of the Confederates believed the Union had a Union soldiers had a good viewpoint. So at that level, at the level of the privates and corporals and buck sergeants, they didn't really hate each other. I don't think the Union and Confederate generals hated each other. One of the most interesting things is most of them knew each other. They had all been in the Union Army together previous to the beginning of the war. And so when they stood across the battlefield from one another, they knew each other. And sometimes they knew their tactics and their plans. So, yeah, I found that to be extremely, extremely interesting.
Well, Larry, I want to thank you so much for being with me here on Back Porch Writer. Tell everybody really quickly where they can find Throw Salt on the Water.
They can get Throw Salt on the Water through Amazon. You can also go to my website, which is Little Cabin Publications at CenturyLink.com, and find it there. And you can order it off of my website too. So you can also order it through North Slope Publications if you're interested in purchasing the book. I want to thank you, Corey, for having me today. I appreciate it very, very much.
Oh, you're welcome. And good luck with the next book. Be sure to keep in touch so I know when that one's coming out. And come on and tell everybody about the next one.
I certainly will do that. Thank you again for having me.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
So be sure to check out his book. It's Throw Salt on the Water over on Amazon.com. And as I said, he could use a little review love. If you're a history buff, go check out the book. It sounds really interesting to me. And I'm not a history buff. I like history, but that's not my thing, really. And I'm interested in this book. So go check it out. It's over on Amazon.com. And, of course, you could also go to his website. But, you know, Amazon, go there. Throw Salt on the Water. That's the name of the book. Thank you so much for joining me here on Back Porch Writer, the show for writers, about writers, and writing. Thanks for listening to Back Porch Writer. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe via iTunes so people just like you can find the show. If you've got comments, questions, or want to be a guest, visit backporchwriter.com for details. I'm your host, Corey Miller. Until next time, pull the chair, sit a spell, and write.